Hi, Karen Smith again. We're now at Module 2, Lesson 7. Today we're going to be looking at UN bodies, the essential organs of the United Nations, as they were laid out and described in the Charter. So that's where we're going to begin. The Charter itself defined the six principal organs in its Chapter 3 or Article 7. And listing them out, they are the General Assembly, the Security Council, the Economic and Social Council, the Trusteeship Council, the International Court of Justice, and the Secretariat. The Charter defines for each of these organs their basic composition, the functions and powers, voting, and procedures. Let's just go and take a quick look at the website. So we can see here in Chapter 3, Article 7, as noted, the principal organs of the United Nations are the General Assembly, the Security Council, Economic and Social Council, a Trusteeship Council, an International Court of Justice, and the Secretariat. And it also notes that, in fact, other organs may be found necessary and can be established in accordance with the present Charter. In other words, the Charter kept itself open and to the possibility of being amended as needed. So the composition. For example, the General Assembly goes on to say that the General Assembly shall consist of all of the members of the United Nations, and then just indicates that there shouldn't be more than 5 representatives in the General Assembly. The functions and powers. The General Assembly may discuss any questions or any matters within the scope of the present Charter or relating to the powers and functions of any organs provided for in the present Charter and, except as provided in Article 12, and this is down here and refers to the Security Council, because there's a distinction between the functioning of the General Assembly and what will be given specifically to the Security Council, may make recommendations to the members of the United Nations or to the Security Council or to both on any such questions or matters. This part gives the General Assembly pretty much full power to deal with almost any issue, with the exception of those that have already been handed off to the Security Council for them to address and deal with. While the Security Council is exercising in respect to any dispute or situation the functions assigned to it in the present Charter, the General Assembly shall not make any recommendation with regard to that dispute or situation unless the Security Council so requests. In other words, if there is an issue being dealt with by the Security Council, the General Assembly, according to Article 12 of the Charter, cannot take up that same topic, even if it differs somehow. The greater majority of the members of the organization differ with how the Security Council is dealing with it. In fact, structurally, the Security Council is the only one allowed to deliberate on that topic that they have taken up. This area of the Charter became problematic very early on, just as the Cold War was beginning to show its face. In 1950, it was becoming clear that there were serious issues connecting what was happening in Korea, the Korean War, and the deadlock in the Security Council. So a particular resolution, which was called the Uniting for Peace Resolution, and it became the UN General Assembly's Resolution 377. This resolution sought to create a way for the United Nations, the larger United Nations, nevertheless, to deal with international peace and security issues, even when the Security Council was failing to act. And to quote the words of the French ambassador at the time, during the GA debate, Jean Chauval, where peace and security are at stake, France considers the General Assembly and the Security Council should assume all the responsibilities laid upon them by the Charter. It is unthinkable that this entire machinery, designed to safeguard the peace and security of the world, should remain inactive when there is a threat to the peace and security. And if there is a real danger of such inactivity, then we must revise our customs, our methods, our rules, and our interpretations. And of course, there was a lot more debate, a lot more said on both sides. But in the end, Resolution 377 was adopted by 52 votes to 5 with 2 abstentions. And what that effectively did was Again, it said that in cases where the UN Security Council fails to act in order to maintain peace, international peace and security, because of the disagreements between its permanent five members, the matter shall be addressed immediately by the General Assembly using the mechanism of the emergency special session. So bottom line, this resolution reshaped a mechanism that was already there, which were special sessions, and massaged it more into what were now called emergency special sessions. Now, this emergency special sessions mechanism wasn't actually called upon or put to use until 1956, but at least it had been established, and it was clear now that there was a way that the United Nations as a whole was not necessarily on issues of peace and security, didn't have to be held hostage by deadlocks between the permanent members of the Security Council. So if you do go back to the Charter and read this section again on the General Assembly and or the Security Council, I think you can begin to see how this takes on a little bit of life. Now, if you just want to go and find out a little bit more about the GA, you can go on over to the UN website. You can also get more information about the president of the GA there. Here you can see Secretary General Ban Ki-moon meeting with Joseph Dice when he was the president-elect back in July of 2010. And you can always get more information about the president. You can understand who he has as his team and the main focus of the presidency. Each person who is the president for a year has a chance to focus attention on some of the issues or areas of concern that they feel are most critical at that time. And that becomes a part of their legacy, a small part of their country's legacy at the UN. Now, back to the General Assembly. The composition, very simply speaking, is made up of all of the members of the United Nations. Now, they are the ones who vote. There are also a significant number of members of the General Assembly who have permanent observer status. And again, we'll go into some of the details of that later on, but I just wanted to bring this up here, that this is the basic overview of the General Assembly. It has a president, they're elected once a year, they usually rotate in September. The current president of the 65th session is Joseph Dice, and the composition of the General Assembly is all of the member states, as well as the observer nations and observer organizations. Next, we go to the Security Council. Now, this is the Security Council, I'd have to say the old one now. With the current renovations taking place at the United Nations, the Security Council even has a temporary location. While this is the original desk, round table of the Security Council that was moved into the temporary area, this is in fact a temporary setting while the major renovations are taking place in the main building area. But onto the Security Council, some of the basics. The head of the Security Council is the president, but the presidency in the Security Council rotates every month, and it rotates simply alphabetically by nation. The composition, it has five permanent members, or the P5, you'll hear them referred to sometimes, and those permanent five are China, France, Russian Federation, the United Kingdom, and the United States. So they're the permanent five. Then there are 10 non-permanent members. And of course, there are still many ongoing discussions dealing with UN renewal that often end up focusing on discussions of how many should be in the Security Council, whether they should be permanent members or not permanent members, what are their rights. Oftentimes, the discussion gets distilled down to that. But these are the 10 non-permanent members that are currently in the Security Council at the moment. And they are usually there for a two-year period. And again, they overlap. And the decisions as to who they will be are made. There's a regional allocation for positions in the Security Council. The African bloc chooses three members, Latin America and the Caribbean, Asian and Western European and others bloc chooses two members each, and then Eastern European bloc chooses one member. At the moment, we have Austria, just going alphabetically, Austria, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Brazil, Gabon, Japan, Lebanon, Mexico, Nigeria, Turkey, and Uganda. And starting in January 2011, for that two-year period will be Colombia, Germany, India, Portugal, and South Africa. Now we go to the Economic and Social Council. ECOSOC, abbreviated, has a bureau that heads it up. A bureau of one president and four vice presidents that are, again, elected annually by the council itself, the council at large at the beginning of the annual session. Now, the council at large is made up of 54 members, and they are elected, again, by the General Assembly. So the General Assembly is the place that does the elections for the Security Council, for ECOSOC, and for most of the other positions. Out of that council at large, the 54 members, they annually vote for their president and vice presidents. And they mostly oversee what's on the agenda and how things are being taken up and make sure that things are moving along smoothly and so on. Now, the Bureau members for 2010 to 2011 at the moment are His Excellency Ambassador Hamidon Ali from Malaysia. You've got from Chile, Mauritius, Moldova, and Norway, you've got vice presidents for ECOSOC. Now we're going to go into the Trusteeship Council. Perhaps you do or do not know very much about the Trusteeship Council. In fact, you probably don't hear anything more about it because since 1994, it's been suspended with the final nation's independence. But the Trusteeship Council was suspended 1st of November in 1994. When Palau finally gained its independence, Palau was the last remaining United Nations Trust Territory. That's the Trusteeship Council. Then, of course, there's the ICJ, the International Court of Justice, based in The Hague. Now, the International Court of Justice is the principal judicial organ of the United Nations, and it began its work in April of 1946. The seat of the court is at the Peace Palace in The Hague, Netherlands, and of the six principal organs of the United Nations, it's the only one that's not located in New York City. Now, the court's role is to settle, in accordance with international law, legal disputes submitted to it by the states, and to give advisory opinions on legal questions referred to by authorized United Nations organs and specialized agencies. The court is composed of 15 judges who are elected for terms of office of 9 years by the United Nations General Assembly and the Security Council. So it requires approval of both. It's assisted by a registry, and that's the name of its kind of its secretariat, its administrative organ, and its official languages are English and French. And that's just the website that you can go to find out about the ICJ. Next, onto the secretariat. Yep, big blue building. Not sure what color it's going to be at the end of the renovations. I assume it's going to be similar, but we don't know. At least, I don't know. Now, the Secretariat is headed up by the Secretary General. The Charter describes him as the Chief Executive Officer. Now, Secretaries General serve for a term of 5 years. Now, in theory, these can be renewed indefinitely, but most have served for 2 terms. The Charter indicates that the Secretary General is to be appointed by the General Assembly, but it's the Security Council who presents the slate of candidates. In other words, any of the 5 permanent members of the Security Council can, in fact, veto a particular individual. So there's a lot more to understand about that nomination and election process. It's a rather fascinating one, but we'll save that for another lesson. And then hopefully when we get round to the next election of a Secretary General, so it will be more fascinating and of more interest to you at that time. But there are many departments and offices that are in the part of the Secretariat used to support the Council's work. They support the UN forces, management of meetings, they have to take appropriate care of governments and guests and participants, they deal with translations of sessions, with the recording and archiving of all of the documents, printing and dissemination of information, and on and on. So we'll come back to all of these individual bodies in more depth in future lessons. So for today's homework, I want you to review this video so that you're really clear about the six principal organs of the United Nations, where they get their mandates from, what those mandates are. Go back to the UN Charter and just read in each of those relevant sections, each of the relevant chapters of the Charter, the main mandate that is given to each. Then I want you to ask two or three others that you meet if they know what are the six major organs, or the five that are remaining, and you can forgive people for not knowing about the Trusteeship Council these days. But if they don't know, then that gives you a chance to explain to them the six that there are, and that just is a way to reaffirm what you have learned. Which one is the only one that is not located in New York? Do you remember? And who heads each one? How long are they elected for? What is their term of service? And who elects them? It varies with each one. Anyway, even if you just remember those few things from today, this is as foundational knowledge and information is what we will continue to build on. I hope you have had fun just doing, again, a quick look at the UN, at the General Assembly, at the Security Council, at the Economic and Social Council, at the International Court of Justice, the Secretariat, and the Trusteeship Council. I look forward to seeing you for tomorrow's lesson. Until then, have a great day.